right. Welcome back, everybody. We're back. Here we are. Dom, it's been a minute. How you doing?
It has. It's been a hot minute, I would say. And I've been doing well, but I'm doing great right now because we have a special treat, not just for ourselves, but also for the great listening public out there, too.
We absolutely do. I am, as usual, excited to dive into everything with you, Dom, but particularly giddy this week because joining us to catch up on a lot of the things that have gone on recently on Survivor 42 is one of our great friends, a prolific podcaster back in his day, and someone I've been really looking forward to chatting with for a long, long time at this point. Welcome back to the podcast. For the first time, I just looked this up, in over 2 years, Jordan Parhar. JP, what's going on, man?
Colin, so great to hear your voice, Dom. It's great to be here. I miss you guys. We were surviving this pandemic okay. But when I was last on, it kind of was just starting, and I was also reflecting on this as well, Colin, because I wanted to look it up. I was like, how long has it been? And I was just thinking about the things that have happened in my life since the last time I was on your podcast, and it's insane the amount of changes that have taken place in my life. So how are you guys doing? Like, how are things? I want to know.
I would imagine for both of us, very little is new over the last couple of years, but I'm eager to find out, and I'm sure many of the listeners who were familiar with you back in your podcasting days would love to find out as well. What has been going on with you over these last couple of years? What kind of drastic changes are we talking about?
Well, I feel like this pandemic has really changed, I think, a lot of our perspectives on life. And it certainly caused me to reevaluate what's most important and to figure out where I want to go with my life and what is important to me and to really take advantage of. I always tried to follow the cliche of live every day like it's your last, but I don't think I really truly appreciated that until this pandemic hit us. And, there's so many things that I just took for granted were just taken away. So, for me, I mean, it's nothing too crazy. I mean, I'm still a teacher. I've switched recently to teaching grade one, which is a massive change in the teaching profession for me, but it's been a lot of fun. It's like I'm a dad to 21 little kids. So that is awesome. I really enjoy that. But just like personal stuff for me, like I've been through like two really intense relationships in that time that unfortunately did not work out. I've moved. I have picked up like new hobbies. I'm golfing all the time and playing tennis. Like these are things that I did not do ever before the pandemic. I've gotten into Peloton. I got suckered in like some of the other people out there. Like just a bunch of random things that have just happened in my life. And I'm grateful to still be standing, and I'm excited. I mean, we're not out of this thing yet, but I'm excited for whenever the end of this thing is, if that is ever going to happen.
Yeah, we will see for if that is ever going to happen at this rate. But yeah, just for the official record, when I pulled up your name on Skype as we were about to start this call, I saw that the last one we did was March 28th, 2020. So literally like a few weeks into the pandemic being a thing with no idea what was going to become of it and no way of knowing the route that it would end up going, obviously. A couple of years later here, but, you know, despite obviously some major setbacks on a global and historic kind of scale, it's good to hear that you've been able to channel that into some sort of positivity, as I know you're inclined to do. But Jordan, I would also like to find out what you would consider your status these days as a survivor or just kind of generally reality TV. Are you a super fan still? Are you a casual? What's your approach been, I suppose, on keeping up with these shows?
Yeah, I think it's a great question, Colin. I would say for me, I've posts, I think, and I think a lot of people who go on reality TV shows experience this to some extent. I think for me, as soon as I came out, I was like, I dived in, dove in head first, and was all about Big Brother, all about Survivor all the time, even more so than I had been prior to being on. And then, and especially with, you know, having reality TV podcast that's going to come with that as well. And I think eventually that just became to be too much. I got burnt out. Most people who followed my podcast know I just had enough, and I decided that I needed to move on. And so I really kind of fell off, I would say, with I certainly did with Big Brother. I watched the All-Star season a couple summers ago because I wanted to support Ian, and I thought that was great. But other than that, have not really paid any attention to Big Brother. I would say Survivor, I would say I kind of like towards like the late 30s wasn't really paying too close of attention. And then I was all in, like just so excited about Winners at War. Thought that was a fantastic season. And I think I came on here and said there's no chance of Tony winning. And that was just unbelievable how that turned out. I was so excited. But yeah, no, after that, I didn't think that I felt that that was the most excited I would be watching Survivor ever, was seeing that finish. And I did not watch Survivor 41. But I had heard a lot of good things about 42, and Colin, you reached out to me and said, hey, are you watching this season? And I hadn't committed yet, but that was kind of, for me, the final, that was the thing that kind of pushed me over to say, okay, let me check this out and see if I'm going to enjoy it. So, I'm glad I did. It's been a really good season. I really like this cast, and I'll probably be on board for season 43, but we'll see what happens. In terms of reality TV, though, I wouldn't say in terms of like this type of genre, I'm super invested, but I'm still all about the reality TV dating shows. I think we're in a golden era of those types of shows, whether we're talking about F-Boy Island or Love is Blind or The Ultimatum or all of these crazy shows that are complete garbage and nonsense and far below YouTube, because you guys are better, I imagine, than those shows. But
sounds like Dom might not be.
Absolutely not. No, I've been really getting into both Ultimatum and Love is Blind in recent weeks and absolutely loving it. So yeah, Jordan, if you ever want to come back on for anything in that extended universe, by all means, you can write your ticket.
Dom, please. I would love to chat. I've got lots of takes about April and all the other people on The Ultimatum and Shake and Love is Blind. Anything with that Nick and Vanessa Lachey host, I'm down to chat about. But
hold on here. How much of that is down to Nick and Vanessa Lachey as hosts, as opposed to just this is the role in life they appear to have been assigned now?
Yeah, it's wild. I think for them for Netflix, it worked out both ways. I think for Netflix, they said, okay, we're going to get these big name people to quote unquote big name people to host this show. And then for Nick and Vanessa Lachey, they don't really have to do any work. They just kind of show up for the reunion show and that's it. And yeah, like the show just writes itself. It's magnificent. So big fan of those shows. And if you guys haven't seen F-Boy Island on HBO Max, or anybody listening to this, if you like trashy reality TV dating shows, that show is unbelievable. One of my favorites. So highly, highly recommend. I think season 2 is going to come out in a couple months here. So yeah, just a suggestion for people if you haven't checked that one out.
Well, I am a big time Nikki Glaser fan, so that has piqued my interest for other reasons as well. But JP, I didn't even realize that you missed season 41 entirely. So that's actually going to be kind of a fascinating perspective to hear, since so much of what we're seeing on 42 here is pretty much a carbon copy of the format that they used on season 41. But what have you made of what Jeff would make a big deal out of referring to as like this new era of Survivor? Does this feel like a remarkably different experience to you as a consumer of this sort of game?
It's interesting for sure, Colin. I would say it seems to be that every episode has some big, crazy magic power or twist or thing that Jeff pulls out of his butt. And that seems to be part of the driving force behind the show instead of the players. And of course, the game is sped up. We have fewer days. We don't have 39 days like we had in the season, like in season 40 and every other season prior to that. So, I mean, I'm enjoying the season for sure. I think a big part of that is probably the cast. I think it's a really strong cast. We have a lot of Canadian representation, which I am really enjoying. But yeah, I don't know. It's different. It's not what I'm used to, but I understand why Jeff wanted to take that approach to try to spice things up. And I am curious to see if this is something that's going to continue in Survivor 43 and beyond. I'm going to guess that it does. I don't know if Redmond has leaked what's happening in the future seasons yet or not, or whoever the Survivor leaker is these days. But I imagine just with the cost of putting the show together, it is significantly cheaper to do it in a shorter amount of time, especially when we're filming back to back. Jeff is getting a little bit older and probably does not want to be out there for, you know, 39 days times two, plus all the other time he needs to spend out there as well. So curious to follow it. I don't know in the long term how much it's going to hold up, but for right now, I'm on board with it.
Yeah, I'm sure it makes a lot of sense behind the scenes for them to keep that abridged schedule and have this snappy turnaround time. We were speculating when we first heard about this news, if they just hadn't announced it, if it wasn't news and they just did it, and I guess maybe they would have to update the chyrons or whatever accordingly. But do you feel like if you weren't being told this and you didn't have this knowledge going in, would the TV product itself feel different? Like, is that actually making itself known in terms of what the audience is seeing, do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, Dom. I would say it seems – so you're asking is an audience member, do I think it would change? Yeah, I think the way from my perspective, and it does seem, even if I wasn't being told – hey, there are fewer days taking place this season, I still think it would feel a little bit rushed. It just seems like it's bang, bang, bang. This is happening. That's happening. And I do understand that it's kind of the direction the show has been going in the past few seasons, but it's hard to say. I can't answer the question without the knowledge of without wiping my brain and being able to see. I'm not sure, but I still feel like for whatever reason, it just seems very fast. And maybe that is because I took a season off. Who knows?
To return quickly to the Canadian representation, Jordan, for anyone unaware, you are Canadian and you actually, I think this is the case for you, although I may be confusing you with someone else. And I'm sorry if that is what's happening here. But I feel like I've heard you say that you went for BB Can because you wanted to do Survivor, but you couldn't because you were Canadian. And so Big Brother Canada was like the best that you could go for. Now that it is open to Canadians, would you be interested in going on Survivor?
Yeah. So to answer your question, Colin, yes, that is 100% true. And I don't know if I talked about that on a podcast or if we talked about that at Podcast House back in the day. But yes, I was a diehard Survivor fan, but I could not go on the show. And I also like Big Brother. So that was the route that I chose to take in terms of my reality TV journey. Now, there is no chance you would see me go on any reality TV show. I was talking to somebody recently, and I said, you know, they asked me that question. They said, would you go on Survivor? Would you go on one of these shows that, that you watch? And I said, no. And if you were to catch me and see me on one of these reality shows, it would be a way, a signal of me telling you without, if I was being kidnapped and held against my will, but I couldn't say anything, you would know. if you see me on a reality show, it's because that has taken place. I've been kidnapped and I've been held at gunpoint and told I need to go on one of these shows. I have no interest at this point in my life. It would not really be worth the risk. The upside wouldn't be worth it for me.
So there's no chance of seeing a newly single Jordan Paha on a FY Island Canada.
Oh man, in another universe, I'm in another life where I was ignorant to what goes on behind the scenes in the reality TV world, then perhaps. But knowing what I know, absolutely not. Especially with where I'm at in my life, I'm very happy, and I don't really have a desire to do that. And I think my reasons for going on Big Brother, none of that really is with me today. I'm a completely different person, I would say. So no, I wouldn't be interested. I would say though, like, that I would love to do Survivor. I would love to do that. I would love to participate in something like that if it wasn't filmed. I would love that. If it wasn't filmed and it wasn't on television, I'd love to do something like that. But it's filmed and it's on TV, so I have no interest. Those days are long behind me. I will say, I genuinely believe if my father, Jerry Parhar, were to get on Survivor, he could win, especially when we see the success of Mike this season. I think my dad's not fully Mike, but he fits in a similar archetype. I think he would do very well. So my reality TV goal and aspirations for the future is not for myself, but to convince my dad to apply for Survivor when he retires from teaching. So if there is any Parhar on your screen again, let's hope it's my dad and not me. If it's me, there's a problem.
Yeah, I was actually thinking earlier today about how many people, not just this season on Survivor, but in recent years and pretty consistently throughout just the entire history of Survivor, get the story of, like, they go out there as kind of a fish out of water or an underdog or whatever, and Survivor brings out the best in them and, like, totally changes their life for the better going forward. And I think Jeff really likes that being a consistent kind of theme across the history of the franchise. But I also did think, I probably along roughly similar lines to thoughts you have had, Jordan, that, like, if you would like to see your life improve noticeably, going on reality TV may be very near the bottom of the list of ways to do that.
It sounds like the happy medium here is for you to go on one of those, like, YouTube Survivor series, which are painstakingly edited down over the course of hundreds of hours for, like, 500 people to ever watch, and which, you know, you can knock it out in a weekend. You go off into the woods somewhere. It's quick and simple. Can go back to your life, and if you fail horribly, then no one's any the wiser.
Yeah, I mean, that would be fun. I would enjoy something like that if it would actually require me to be in the elements. Dom, Colin, if you guys get on one of these YouTube Survivor seasons, let me know. I'll come with you, and we'll see who can outwit, outplay, and outlast the weekend.
All right, we'll see if we can get Austin Trupp out of retirement sometime down the line there.
Awesome, sounds good.
JP, let me ask you this: as someone who did not see anything from season 41 and is watching these twists and new advantages and everything play out for the first time here on 42, have any stood out as particular hits or misses from your perspective? Like the shot in the dark, the amulets, the hourglass, knowledge is power, anything in either direction jumping out as particularly fun or particularly bad to you?
Well, the first, okay, so just to clarify, so all of these twists that we've seen this season, they were all in 41 as well?
The amulets were not.
Okay. See, the amulet of that one I like because it just reminded me of the medallion of power from Nicaragua. Although,
what's not to love?
You liked it for that reason.
Well, it just the name. It just reminded me of the medallion. And I love it. I just love disasters. And the medallion of power was just one of the worst twists in the history of Survivor. So the amulet of power, or whatever it's called, just for whatever reason, reminded me of that. It made me laugh. I don't know how great of a twist it is. I would say, I mean, actually thinking out loud here, I do think the concept of as you vote people out, it becomes more powerful. I like that. I think that's pretty cool. I think the knowledge is power twist, that was a really interesting one. I think that's extremely overpowered in a way, and it's kind of insane that Drea was not able to execute with that properly, because she really should have. But I mean, that's a testament to Omer and how well he's playing the game, I think. But yeah, I would say those ones stand out to me. The risk your vote thing, it was fine. I don't know if that was necessarily my favorite. I mean, again, we get the prisoner's dilemma thing, but I don't know, for whatever reason, I didn't seem to be too enthralled by that one. And then we'd have people would lie about it, and then some people would tell the truth about it. It seemed, I don't know, that one didn't seem as good from my perspective. But I am curious to see if the amulets and the knowledge is power twist will continue in 43 and beyond. We'll see. I'm sure Jeff's got some other twists planned as well, knowing him.
I'm guessing that whiteboard is pretty full of ideas for the future. What did you think of Jeff with the whole hourglass thing where Roxroy ultimately went and smashed it and the challenge result was reversed?
Yes, I forgot about that. Yeah, that that seemed kind of stupid from my perspective. Just the whole drama of, oh, Roxroy can turn back time and smash the hourglass. It's like, well, obviously he's going to do that. Like, why not do that? Like, they're acting like it's this huge dramatic sequence of events that's taking place, and it's game changing and unlike anything we've ever seen before. But as Jeff made abundantly clear, it was on the season before, and it sounds like the person on the season before used it as well, if I'm remembering what he said correctly. So yeah, that one just seemed again a little too overpowered and ridiculous, and the players had no idea that this is what he was going to get. I mean, that just because they had the option as well, someone else could have taken that instead of him. So yeah, I hope they don't use that one again. I have a feeling Jeff absolutely loves that one though. So if I was a betting man, I'd bet on that twist coming back 100% before any of the other ones, just because I think Jeff was just so excited and he loved it so much. My only regret about that twist, well, I mean, I don't have any regrets about it because I had nothing to do with it, but my only wish for that one is if somehow Coach Ben Wade got that power, because I feel like it would have just been so hilarious if Coach would have had it, and he would have been on his high horse, and it would have been unbelievable television. So I'm hoping in a future All-Star season, number one, I really want to watch Coach on Survivor again. So I might be one of three people who wants to see him back, but I would love to see Coach, and I would love to see Coach get that twist, but otherwise not a huge fan of it.
And to return to something that you said a little while ago, but I totally agree with you about one of the best things on this season. I think this cast in general has been like a complete home run. And I would say the same, incidentally, about the 41 cast as well. I think with like maybe a couple of exceptions, there's been pretty much no one from either of those two groups that I wouldn't be actively like eager to see come back to Survivor in the future. And this wasn't the case to nearly the same extent on 41 as it is with 42. But I think another huge, huge pro in favor of Survivor 42, just kind of in general, has been the balance that they have struck with this cast. I believe it remains the case that this is, like, confessional wise and screen time or whatever, the most evenly distributed airtime in like the entire history of Survivor, or very, very close to it, and much, much, much more so than the overwhelming, like, super majority of seasons that we've had historically that tend to feature like one or two or three, maybe four kind of main characters, and then a bunch of people getting pretty much nothing until the week that they get voted out. Has that balance been something that you've actively picked up on when watching this?
I think so, for sure. And I think that's partially why I have grown to appreciate this cast, is because we are getting to know a lot of these different characters and we're seeing a lot of different perspectives on the season. So I'm in complete agreement with you on that one. I think it's fantastic. I was surprised when I saw that Lynn Spillman had been let go from being the casting director of Survivor, just because she has been in that role for decades. And I honestly, is Jeff the casting director now? I have no clue who the casting director of Survivor is at this point. But honestly, when I saw that, and this reference will get lost on a lot of people, I imagine, but I am a diehard fan of the Dallas Cowboys football team in the NFL. And to me, this screamed Jerry Jones, the owner of the Cowboys, firing longtime celebrated head coach Tom Landry and just bringing in his own guy and thinking, oh, well, I can do this better. You have no idea what you're doing. And ultimately for the Cowboys, that did work out for a little bit. And now it's not working out so great for them. But I did not think that this casting situation would work at all for Jeff. And I didn't see 41, but I will take your word for it that it's a really good cast, and I'll have to go back and watch that season. And for this season, yeah, like whoever he hired, or if it was Jeff, did a fantastic job. Like, there is so much representation on this cast. There is so much personality. There are just great characters in general. There are so many people to root for from different backgrounds. It's fantastic. Like, you can find somebody, I imagine most people watching this show can find somebody that they identify with on some level, which normally in Survivor isn't always the case. So I really have enjoyed that.
Yeah, I think the key element that has made these more recent casts a lot better for my money than almost any cast from the first 20 or so years is they really seem to be leaning into casting super fans who are out there with at least a rough idea of what they're doing and who care a lot about winning. And I really strongly believe that a great cast, which it seems like we can expect, hopefully at least, not to jinx it, can expect to continue seeing in at least the relative immediate future, is almost like a great cast can overcome so many terrible production twist ideas and decisions along the way. So as long as that remains a thing, I'm going to continue to be very optimistic about how good modern Survivor can be compared to those seasons in the late and frankly like mid kind of 30s, with a couple of exceptions where it was hard to maintain that same optimism, other than, you know, we would talk about this as it was happening in real time and we would flag up, you know, David versus Goliath is a perfect illustration of how a great cast can overcome what the producers are trying to do to the game that may not be so great, or millennials versus Gen X. There are other examples. But larger point here is I really feel good about the place that Survivor is in these days on the whole compared to where I was a couple of years ago. And I think I'm probably not alone in feeling that way. Let me actually, for a second time, return to the Canadian element of all of it, because this is the second cast where we've had several Canadians. We had one guy on season 39, but then 41 and 42 are where they really started bringing in more from your part of the globe there, Jordan. And without getting into hyper-specifics here, it seems like Canadians are off to a great start. Do you think there's anything to that, or is this a coincidence? Do you feel like Canadians are better suited for any reason to be good at Survivor?
No, absolutely not.
I do.
I don't think
for the record.
You do. Okay, you do. I don't think so. I think from my perspective, there's a few things that are taking place here. One, Survivor is very popular in Canada. It has been for a very long time. So I imagine the people that were cast last season were big fans of the show, just as the people who are on, I don't know how big of a fan Drea is, but Omer and Marianne are clearly massive fans of the show, and you can see that, and they're doing very well because of it. I think that's one thing that's taking place. I also think because of the drought of 39 seasons, whatever it was, where Canadians were not eligible to go on the show, I think there is a large pool of people that are really dying to go on this show that are from Canada. And that opens up a lot of really quality people to participate and be on this. And from my perspective, and I'm biased because I'm from an older season of the franchise, but this is what happened in Big Brother Canada as well. And now I have not watched the last few seasons, so I can't speak to the strength of the casts, but in the first two seasons of Big Brother Canada had unbelievable casts. And I think a big reason for that is there was a huge pool of people applying to go on the show because there were so many fans who for years had not been able to go on, who finally were able to do it. And I think that's a big reason why we got the cast of Big Brother Canada 2, which for me is one of the greatest casts ever assembled in a reality TV show. It was unbelievable. So I think that's a part of why we're seeing the success. I don't think Canadians are more well suited to be successful at Survivor necessarily. We have Canadians are stereotyped for being nice and kind and respectful, and yeah, I think a lot of us are, but there are lots of kind and nice and respectful Americans too, so I don't necessarily think it's Canadians are more well suited. I don't know. Dom, as an adopted Canadian, what do you think about that?
Well, it is weirdly refreshing to have people local to me, like hometown heroes, if you like, to actually move on Survivor for a change, which I did not think that would actually change when I moved to Canada, but here we are now. To tie into the BB Can point, my understanding is the consensus for the last few seasons is the casting has been great and the seasons have been great too. And especially this most recent season of BB Can, very well received basically across the board, as far as I can tell. So I don't know if you're under the stewardship of Arissa Cox or whatever the reason is, but it seems like they have kind of found a formula that works for them and they're able to just keep doubling down on that. And meanwhile, Survivor is kind of a shedding all of its former history to some extent and entering this new era with these new foundational assumptions. And time will tell if a lot of that will stick or how well it's going to work in the end. But the casting does seem to be one element where I think conclusively it is better than it has been for a while now. And it almost throws into sharp relief how frustrating it is that other aspects of the show seem to have stalled or gone backwards. So like the challenges, for example, really nothing to write home about and have not been for a while. And I saw someone say recently that if you could have modern cast with the challenges from like 10, 15 years ago, that might be the perfect blend there. And I can't disagree with them.
I think that would be ideal. But I think from my perspective, it's a money thing. Dom, like Colin, what do you think? Do you think it's a money thing why these challenges have been so lackluster?
I do think that not necessarily even they can't afford different challenges. I think it is we know our routine here in Fiji. We know how to set these up. We know where we're going to store them. We know we can bring them back next time. And that helps just keep this well-oiled machine even better oiled. And the critique that I would have, and this is something that we not only brought up repeatedly during our pre-merge podcasts on this season, but have been bringing up for plural years at this point, is the challenge, particularly the individual immunity challenges for the first few weeks right after the merge, are essentially just testing the same skills over and over and over again, which was never the case prior to like the late 30s or so of Survivor, where and you know, plenty of seasons before that were filmed in Fiji as well, where it is. And I actually tweeted about this earlier today. To this point in this season, we have had 5 individual immunity challenges, and all of them have been nothing but a combination of balance and endurance. And not only do I think that that's kind of uninteresting from a TV perspective, but again, this is something we anticipated and talked about before seeing any of this actually play out on this season. And I think
Jordan, if you haven't listened to us in years, don't worry. It's just the same.
Truly. No, you're not wrong. But,
perfect.
But I genuinely think that it's going to have a negative effect on the game if it continues to be that predictable, what the challenges are going to be once we hit the merge, and knowing like if someone is just bad at balancing, they have essentially no chance of winning any of the first like 4 or 5 or so individual immunity challenges. And inversely, if someone's very good at balance and endurance, their threat level just goes through the roof.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And I think with Jonathan in particular, it blows me away that when you point that out, is look at this dude. He's, I don't know how tall he is. He's like, say he's 250 pounds or whatever he is. He's winning these balance and endurance competitions too. Imagine if that wasn't what was going on. Now, if there were puzzles involved, it would probably be a little bit different for him. But still, that really blows my mind that he's able to dominate in this fashion as well, rather than it just being pure strength based challenges.
And I think at first, when Tori won the first 2 post-merge challenges, I was really hoping we were getting up for this kind of fizzling out almost of Jonathan as this big challenge piece. Well, yeah, he dominates pre-merge, single-handedly carries his tribe in a lot of these challenges, and then as soon as he gets to the individual portion, he's just a damn squib. But he was able to turn that around, and now it is, we're back to just assuming by default that, yeah, of course, Jonathan's going to win the challenge until proven otherwise.
Yeah, and I would say, though, as we also flagged up in our pre-merge podcasts, in case anyone missed them, I think it is predictable to a certain point that the first several are going to be nothing but balance and endurance, and then it will switch back. That has at least been the case in all of the most recent seasons, that once we get down to Final 4, Final 5, Final 6, even maybe, I guess we'll find out this week, they will start putting in like giant obstacle courses for those kind of end game immunity challenges. And we would talk about it in terms of like the balance and endurance portion that we thought would be coming up would potentially be the worst time to be Jonathan in the challenges at any phase of this season. But as you correctly flagged up here, Jordan, it seems like he's crushing it even in that respect as well. So I think the clock may be ticking on opportunities to get rid of Jonathan if they don't do it very, very soon, because I think the end game challenges are going to be even better suited for him.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What do you make of Jonathan? Let's dive into some of these just kind of players in particular. What have you made of Jonathan to this point, and the kind of probably not, although counterexamples are currently escaping me, unparalleled kind of challenge threat status that he has had all season? Because we've certainly had many, many, many challenge beasts over the years, but I would say they were also people who were in casts where other people could have conceivably been challenge beasts, whereas this season, it really seemed like Jonathan was head and shoulders, both literally and in the challenges, above the entire rest of the cast. And that, I think, is a pretty interesting dynamic, and a bad one for him, but he's doing well with it.
He really is. And yeah, it's just remarkable how much stronger he is than everybody. And I imagine in a random cast, he would stand out in that manner, but especially this cast. And now that Drea is out, Drea's very physically fit as well. I think that's one less threat for him. I mean, other than Lindsay, who is going to challenge him based on who's left here? I don't think, like, is Romeo going to be able to take on Jonathan? I don't think so. That would be the ultimate David versus Goliath victory if I've ever seen one. And I mean, who knows? This is Survivor, and Jeff would absolutely love that if something of that nature were to happen. But I do think it's really impressive what he's done. I imagine, just based on random chance, he's not going to be able to pull off a Mike Holloway and win all of these challenges all the way down the stretch. And once that happens, he will become a very big target and will likely get voted out, especially with all of these comments of people saying, oh, well, I think Lindsay said Jonathan's starting to unravel. He's annoying me. And Drea saying he's getting hangry and all these other things. Like, I do imagine someone of his size eating a handful of rice every day. Like, that's, I don't know how he's functioning and making it through the challenges. Like, he probably eat, like, the amount of calories he eats per day, like, he's probably eating, what, I don't know, 5,000 calories a day normally when he's at home. And on Survivor, he's eating less than 10% of that, 5% of that a day. It's just really impressive what he's been doing. And I'm very excited and curious to see if he can continue to go on a run the rest of the way. I don't know if I'm necessarily rooting for him to win, but I think it would be one of the more impressive victories if he is able to just go on a run here and win out.
Do you think that he is in there with a chance to get the jury votes if he makes it to Final Tribal?
I think if Jonathan makes it to the end, it's going to depend on who he's sitting next to. I don't think he's drawing dead. I think he absolutely has a chance. Is he making some people upset? Absolutely, he's making people upset. I think Lindsay clearly isn't too thrilled with him. Marianne's made comments about him. Drea's made comments about him. But at the same time, I think if he gets there, that he's gonna have that resume that's going to be super impressive. It's gonna come down to his final tribal performance, and I don't know what they did in 41. I imagine it was the same modified final tribal situation that they have introduced in recent seasons, which I am not a fan of at all. But yeah, thinking about this out loud again, I do worry about his ability to be coherent in terms of explaining his case in terms of why he deserves to win. But he does have some awareness. He has mentioned before this season, oh, you know, the big guy, I can't be doing this, or I can't be eating more than everyone. He I know he's not coming across as the smartest, and I imagine I don't know what the talk is about Jonathan on social media, or what the narratives are on Reddit or those sorts of things, what people are saying, but he's not a complete moron. He has some understanding of what he has to do. So I still think he's got a shot, and I hope he gets to the end to plead his case, because I think it would be super interesting, especially if he were to be up against somebody like an Omer or a Lindsay at the end of it.
Yeah, I do think I'm not willing to say that Jonathan is drawing dead at this point, although for many, many weeks now, based on not so much the Twitter support or lack thereof that Jonathan has been receiving on my timeline, but when I go to poker, there are a ton of people there who are big time kind of casual Survivor fans, and so many of them love Jonathan that I'm bracing myself and have been for quite some time for the very conceivable timeline in my mind where he does make it to the end but does not win, because I think in the eyes of casual fans that would potentially cause some sort of outcry after he's dominated at least some element of the game to the extent that he has. But I do agree with you that he's shown plenty of awareness about how he's perceived as one of the bigger guys. I think the issue is he acknowledges, this is what I definitely can't be doing. And then we often will go see him do exactly that, at least on the TV episode.
Yeah. And you know what? I think maybe part of, I have a little bit of a soft spot for Jonathan, because when I was on reality TV way back when, I tended to do similar things. I would say, oh, I know I can't do this, and I would still do those same things. So, I feel for Jonathan. I hope things go well for him, but it's going to be interesting. And as somebody who is very plugged in to the casual fan out there with Survivor, similar to you, Colin, talking to people on the streets as Jeff Probst does, I agree. The casual fans will be very angry if Jonathan gets to the end and he does not win. I can't remember off the top of my head any recent seasons where casuals were super angry about the final result. I don't know what happened. Was that 41? Okay, so I'll have to watch 41, but I off the top of my head, I was thinking the only other one I could really think of that would stand out where the casuals were extremely angry was good old Russell Hansen in Survivor Samoa, and then to a lesser extent in Heroes versus Villains.
Does your dad, the legendary Jerry Parhar, like Jonathan?
You know, what's funny is my dad has not been watching the season yet, but knowing my dad extremely well, Jonathan, without question, my dad hasn't seen a second of the season yet. He will eventually. He hasn't seen the cast, but I know 100% Jonathan will be his favorite. He will root for him to the end, and for my dad's sake, I'm hoping Jonathan comes through, because he would be very happy to see someone like him win. There was that scene a few episodes ago where Mike gathered up all the guys with Rox Roy. I think it was Mike who said, maybe it was Rox Roy, but he said, we got to get all the strong guys got to go to the end. And that is basically my dad's philosophy of when he watches Survivor every season. He says, since Malcolm lost in Survivor Philippines, every single season he's been saying, why don't the strong people just get together and vote out the weak people? That hurts my dad to this day that Malcolm Freeberg never won Survivor. So hopefully Jonathan can get it done, but we'll see what happens.
And my only other thought on Jonathan this week, Jordan, I don't know if you even know this, but they are doing a season of The Challenge with people just all pulled from various CBS shows. And they've already filmed. Oh. They've already filmed the first one. Yeah, there are a bunch of people from like Survivor and Love Island or whatever else. And if that does become a recurring franchise, some bookmaker out there hearing my voice right now, hit me up with what odds you would give. I really want to bet on Jonathan to win a future season of that, if not Survivor.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, Jonathan in that type of show, he'd clean up. He'd absolutely win on. So this is, hold on, this is only CBS reality shows are playing in a challenge type of environment. There's no MTV crossover.
I believe that is the case.
Wow,
I
that's
think
going to be
that,
crazy.
I mean, that's even better news for Jonathan, right? I don't know how well he would mesh with like the Johnny's Bananas and the
Yes.
British Kyles or whatever of the world. Like I think he needs that kind of CBS crowd to keep him honest.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if so, we're, yeah, it would probably be. I'm just thinking off the, and is the cast out
The cast
of that
is
season?
out, although I would tell you if you want to Google it, tread gently because I believe the spoilers are also out.
Oh, okay. So maybe I'll hold off then for now. But just thinking, and I don't know if he's on there, but I'm guessing Fessy is probably on it because he's been on the challenge. Is that
I
correct?
so
Or is
I
it
think
only?
they actually may have held, I'm not positive about this again, I'm sorry, but I think they held off on the people who are actually on like the MTV
Okay.
challenge.
So it's all brand new. That is super
So to
exciting.
like drop a couple names here and spoiler, I can't imagine there are any people out there who would care that much, but like to give a couple instances, like Tyson is on it and like Sarah Lucina is on it and
Oh,
yeah.
really? Sarah Lucina's on it?
I believe so.
Wow. Okay, wow.
I
Tyson
saw
and
the
then.
cast once months ago at this point, but it's people along those lines that I think Jonathan would have a pretty significant physical edge against, all due respect.
Absolutely. I do think there are some, there might be a few people in the CBS reality realm that could give him somewhat of a challenge, more so than this cast he's going up against on 42. But as we discussed, I mean, he's a monster. Like I really think he would dominate on a show like that. So yeah, Colin, let me know if those bookmakers give you odds on Jonathan winning a future season, because I think that's a lock.
Well, hey, don't kill my action here, Jordan. I want some favorable odds
I
here.
just edit that part out of the podcast, and we're good.
All right. So, Jonathan aside, I know he may be your dad's future favorite on this season. I would guess he may not be your number one kind of rooting interest at this point, although certainly correct me if I'm wrong on that, but who is emerging as the person you're like most rooting for to see win here?
Yeah, it's bounced around a little bit, and I think that the, as you mentioned, the balance in terms of the edit has played a role in that. Believe it or not, early on, I was rooting very hard for Roxroy. I was really rooting for Roxroy, and the reason why is because being in the reality TV sphere, you run into a lot of people. And I have been guilty of this as well. So I'm not throwing stones. This is just a fact from my perspective. But a lot of people go on these shows and they are not true to themselves and are trying to be something else, something they're not, that's very disingenuous. And seeing that over and over again has become tiresome for me. So when I saw Roxroy, I just saw, okay, here's a stay-at-home dad who just tells it like it is, and you might not like what he says, but he's being honest and he's being genuine and he's being true to himself. And I loved that. I absolutely adore Roxroy, and I was hoping he was going to win. I figured he had no chance, but it was fun rooting for him while he was on the season. Other than Roxroy, since then I've bounced around. I'm trying. I like Lindsay a lot. I think she's doing really well. I think she's playing a good game. I think she's smart. She's doing well on the challenges. I think of the players that are left in the game, she might be the best all-around player from my perspective. I mentioned her earlier. I'm rooting for Romeo. I think Romeo, if he can pull this off, would be quite the rise from the ashes type of story that Jeff would absolutely love. And I think it's hard not to root for Romeo. Like he's this little guy who's he's trying his best, and he's Hai's not treating him well, and he's the underdog, right? It's hard. It's I always like to root for the underdog on these shows. So Romeo is another one that I like. Gotta go, I think, from my perspective, probably in my heart, I have to be patriotic and support the Canadians. So I would say with who is left, my loyalty is most with Marianne and Omer. I would say I understand the frustration that some of the cast is having with Marianne, and that she's a little different. She is very excitable. But I also can really relate to Marianne as somebody who was a diehard fan of one of these shows. And when you finally get out there, every single little thing that takes place, it's magical. It's unbelievable to be there, especially if you've been watching one of these shows your whole life. So I understand why she is so over the top and maybe not fully herself out there, because she is like, I imagine Marianne is not that excitable on a day-to-day basis in her everyday life. But for her, she is genuinely excited for all of these things to take place in Survivor. So rooting for Marianne, I think, as crazy as it sounds, I do think she's got a chance with just the way, and I don't know if the show is being edited. I mean, it is clearly being edited differently with the way things are more balanced, but she is definitely getting the, everybody wrote me off, nobody gave me a chance, and now look at me now type of edit from my perspective. So I could certainly see Marianne winning. And then I think Omer, I think he's just playing the best game right now. He's doing a remarkable job. I mean, the lie he told Mike was kind of mean about Hai, but it worked out well for him. And he's just been running everything from behind the scenes. Now, I imagine with there being so few players left that people are going to realize, oh, wait, this guy is dominating and he's running things behind the scenes and we really need to look out for him. But at the same time, I mean, I think he's playing very well. He's playing calm. He's not getting too ahead of himself. And I think he is in a great position to win. Now, I don't know what the discourse is surrounding this season, but I imagine most people are talking about Omer as the favorite to win at this point. No?
I believe that is probably the case, although I too have been fairly checked out from the general kind of winner edit discussion or odds making or whatever. But I would also say, without getting too far into like spoiler territory, a couple of different things happened on season 41 that would make me feel and do make me feel so much less confident in any of those things being nearly as reliable as they were for the vast majority of Survivor's run up to that point, that I would guess there's significantly less confidence in any particular direction than there would have been this time a couple years ago.
Interesting. Okay. Sounds good.
And sorry to go off on a bit of a tangent here, but when you were talking about Marianne, it made me wonder, when you were in the Big Brother Canada house as like a super fan of Big Brother yourself, I would imagine that there were times during the early days where you'd probably even a lot on day one of like, oh my God, I'm in the house. Oh my God, I'm in the diary room. Or, oh my God, my closest ally, just one head of household, and I'm lock safe this week, or potentially not lock safe this week. Sorry.
Yeah. Yes, in my case.
No, but the larger question here is, how long did that sort of thing take to wear off for you, or at least diminish to a noticeable extent? Because I'm wondering if Marianne may be at the point where she's kind of settling down along those lines.
To think about that, to be honest with you, Colin, I don't think it really ever, that never went away until I was done, until I was home back in my parents' house in Surrey, British Columbia, I think that would have been June of 2015. That was kind of when I was like, oh, okay, like this is over. I remember I was, I walked into the house and I just like, I got on my knees. It was just like so happy. It was unbelievable. I couldn't believe it. Yeah. Every single little thing, like you said, was just so cool. And of course, when you go through the day to day, like some of that stuff, you forget about it, but there are so many different moments that take place on a season of one of these shows that from start to finish, you continue to experience things where you think, oh my gosh, I'm doing this. For example, like I had been voted out. I was voted out relatively early, and I was the first member of the jury, and I had to wait. I had to wait 5 weeks in the jury house until the end of the season. And right before the finale, this probably was 3 days before the finale filmed, we had our live, well, not our live, but we had our jury roundtable, and we had been in the jury house, and I think for the most part, I kind of figured, okay, like most of the cool things that I'm going to get to do are done. This experience is almost over. When am I going to see my family? What's it going to be like on the outside world? Those sorts of things. And we were getting ready for our round table. And I had no idea what to expect, when that took, what was going to take place. And we started filming and we were waiting for the person to come out to host our round table. I assumed it would be a Canadian player, and out of nowhere comes Ian Terry. And I could not believe it was Ian. Like I was just such a big fan of his, and we had, I can't remember if it was like a fireplace setup or like there was candles or there was something. And so when Ian came out and they were filming to getting us ready to film this, you know, this scene of him walking in, I like sprinted over to Ian uncontrollably. And I knocked over one of the candles on the table, and one of the producers lost his mind, like screaming and yelling at me because he thought I was going to burn down the set from this candle. And I was at the time being, you know, 21-year-old, you know, naive me. I was so taken aback because I thought like, well, this is Ian. Like, obviously I'm going to go nuts over Ian. Like, what do you expect? Like, why are you so angry? And now being, you know, 7 years later, I understand like, oh yeah, that was pretty ridiculous of me to do that. But, and I think from that producer's perspective, he thought like Jordan, this is over. You don't need to keep putting on this act. But for me, like that was genuine, pure excitement. Like I did feel that way. And I think it probably was very off-putting for a lot of people. But when you get to do that, it's like you're in fantasy land. It's unbelievable. So that's a long way of saying, like, Marianne, I get it. I get why you're going crazy over every little thing, because I've been there. And I also understand though, why other people on her tribe are like, Marianne, like, come on, like, really? Like, is that really getting you excited? I genuinely, yeah, I think it probably is. But yeah, I imagine because this experience is so short, I still think she's going to be able to play the game. I still think she's going to have a chance to win, but there are going to be moments for her where the stakes are high, and it's going to be extremely difficult for her to come through in the clutch. And I'm not saying that she can't, but I think back to myself, you know, 7 years ago being in that situation and caring so much about winning and being considered a good player and being one of the best. Like that was so important to me that I completely lost sight of just some basic principles of what you should be doing when you're playing Big Brother and when you're in the house. And I think that was a big reason why I messed up so badly and did what I ended up doing. So I hope Marianne saw my season or has seen Superfans screw up before and is able to not react in the same way. But it's just so hard, like when it matters so much to you and that's your life. And for me at 21, like that was so important to me. That was a big part of my life. So it just put a ton of unnecessary pressure on me to do well. And I think that's just so hard to overcome. So it's a long way of me saying, if I were to play Big Brother or Survivor, one of these shows now, when I don't care at all, I genuinely think I do pretty well because I just wouldn't care. And that level of pressure that you place on yourself as a super fan, it just makes things so much harder. And that's why for me watching Omer, I'm so impressed with what he's been doing, because I imagine he's got a lot of pressure on him. He knows how big the stakes are here and he's still doing extremely well.
For what it's worth, I think someone who knew Marianne, years ago had said that, no, that's just how she is. That's her resting energy level at all times. And they're not surprised by any of what they're seeing there.
I think Marianne is a case, I may be wrong about this, so I'm sorry if so, but I think Marianne is more of a Big Brother fan than even necessarily a Survivor fan. So Jordan, I wouldn't be shocked at all if she has been in the BB Can streets and does know a bit about your season.
Oh, that's wild.
I think that may be completely fake news on my end, to be honest, but that's the story I've told myself. Dom, let me ask you. Who are you rooting for to win this season?
Well, I'm in the happy position of I'm kind of rooting for all the people who I think have an actual shot of winning the season. I like Omer, I like Mike, I like Lindsay, and I like Marianne. And I think those are the four people. And how great is it that there are four people out with six left who have a real shot at this thing? I'm not rooting for Jonathan, but I think he's fascinating as a TV character, just the way that his mythology has been built up and the way that he's buying into it and the way that he has this almost Ken McNichol-esque allergy to what seem to be some of the fundamental elements of Survivor sometimes. And then I really have not warmed to Romeo, but that's okay. I don't think we're going to have to talk about Romeo as our winner this time next week. So honestly, I'm liking how this endgame is shaping out so far.
Yeah, and actually...
Wait, is the finale next week?
No, it's not. Dom is also out here spreading fake news.
Wait, what?
Oh, okay.
I guess it is
isn't it a week tomorrow?
Basically.
A week Wednesday?
Wednesday, yes. So you're not wrong. The finale is not the next episode, but I think it's the one after that.
Okay. Wow. Okay. That came up quick.
So pretty audacious of Dom to round 9 days into a week.
No. I think it was exactly clear what I meant. Anyone who can deconstruct language properly, but fine. You do you.
And I will also, Dom, by the way, ask you to put some respect on Ken McNichol's name, please, on these podcast airwaves. But to actually just because I know I'm going to forget to ask about this because I already did it once and I don't want to do it again. When you were talking about Lindsay, it reminded me to ask Jordan, what did you think of the do or die challenge?
Yeah, the do or die, it just seemed like massive stakes. And to be honest, I was surprised that that wasn't just free immunity for Jonathan. Like I was a little taken aback when Lindsay was competing. Just because like the consequences of that, like you are out. Like that's just nuts. The fact that she survived that, and I believe Jeff said the person who had to do that in 41 also survived that, which is bananas to me. I mean, it's great television. Do I think it's fair? No, but I was on the edge of my seat watching it. So that is another one that I imagine Jeff will be very excited to use again, along with Rox Roy's hourglass of time or whatever we want to call that twist.
Yeah, survived it, showing the same audacious disregard for basic probability as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I was wondering if when they put the do or die twist in, are they rooting for the person to do or to die? Because I think
to do.
That's the thing is, I think in their mind, the best case scenario is they get this ultimately high stakes, dramatic moment, but the person makes it through unscathed. And so far, that has been what they have gotten both times. At the same time, to reference what Dom was just talking about, like just the basic mathematics behind it, if these people are going to keep not switching boxes, they are in the long run going to be getting a bad result twice as often as they get a good result there. And I really don't know that they're factoring in, like they meaning the producers are factoring in how potentially like bad for the show or devastating for the audience, depending on who the ultimate victim of that is, it could be. And I feel like they are really playing with fire in a major way as things pertain to the do or die. But Dom, do you think we're going to see the do or die again on 43 or sometime in the future?
I fear that we will. Yeah. And I think this episode is the perfect illustration of why it's so kind of ill-conceived as a twist, where think about how great that actual tribal council was once we got this faffing about at the start with the do or die twist out of the way, and we got to what should have been the meat of the vote and at a very important, you know, turning point in the game. Think about what the timeline looks like where, oh, Lindsay picks the wrong goat behind the wrong door or whatever and ends up going out there. Like, if that's the end of that episode and we're robbed of the Drea fake out with the knowledge is power and then her getting blindsided on the way back and then the way that she handled her exit, like, that sounds like a much worse episode to me. That's not a timeline I want to live in. And given that we had both of those things back to back, in theory, that's great, right? You get the natural conclusion to the episode and then also this great moment to kick off the tribal council. But I don't think that looking back on this, anyone is going to remember the do or die twist or even associate it with the events that happened just after that. They're going to remember, you know, Drea and Mike and Drea going out. No one's going to remember, you know, Lindsay effectively like rolling a die or flipping a coin. That just won't register with anyone's memory of those events, I think.
I agree with that. And I agree, unfortunately, with the idea that we are probably favorites to see this, maybe not on 43, but potentially on 43. And I would guess somewhere along the way, they will decide that enough time has passed that they want to give this another crack. And if that does happen, I think I would literally pay money for them to do it at pretty much any point other than exactly this final seven vote. Dom, you know this, but for people who were not around in the early days of this podcast existing, we began not intending to do like episode by episode coverage of recent Survivor or of whatever Survivor season was airing, but we did like one-off podcasts about why the final nine was so significant and why the final seven was so significant as far as like a tipping point within the game. And now in the new era, neither the final nine, like the final nine vote doesn't exist anymore because they keep splitting them into two groups when they're at 10. And so it's just a group of five and then another group of five. And then we're magically down to eight. And then back to back seasons. Now, I believe it's the case that we've had this do or die to contend with that could have just completely eliminated the final seven vote as well. And those, for my money, are the 2 points in any season of Survivor that you must not do this sort of thing or anything of this nature at. The final nine and final seven are generally, especially with casts full of super fans that are dying to make moves to build up their final tribal council resume, 2 votes that you cannot jeopardize not taking place. And I really, really hope that if we do see this back, they take that into consideration next time. And I also just wanted to flag up this jarring stat that I had certainly understood just experientially, but not done the actual math on how significant it was until listening to Rob and Steven this week on the Survivor Know-It-Alls. We now merge with 12 or 13 people, and between the time where we merge and we are down to the final three, we now only have four votes that are just proper Survivor votes. We, at the merge, have the 12 split up into two different groups of six, where half of them are going to be immune, and that's not really a regular Survivor vote. We have, again, final 10 is gone, and final 9 are both gone because they've been just splitting them into two smaller groups. We have the do or die now at final 7, and on top of that, we have final 4 fire making, removing that vote from being a thing. So we literally are already down to 4 regular Survivor votes from what used to be like 9 or 10 between the merge and the finals, which is just like crazy to hear the actual like number on.
That is bananas. I did not realize that.
Yeah. I certainly realized how that very frequently votes were essentially turned into different kind of sideshows, but I didn't realize that it was that staggering of a drop off. And honestly, if I had to bet on it, I would feel like in this modern era, we are more likely to see that number be reduced than to see it increase. But hopefully, you know, to once again flag up Rob Sestern, you know, hopefully lower expectations are the key to happiness there. And in bracing myself for the worst, I'll be happy with whatever we end up getting in the future there. But yeah, it's certainly a different game than we were playing for quite a while there. And I feel like, honestly, there are no casts that need that sort of thing less than the casts of probably 40, 41, and 42. I would have more confidence in those three casts than pretty much any cast leading up to that to make for interesting votes and interesting TV, totally independent of whatever twists you feel compelled to throw at them. I feel like no casts have ever needed twists less than the ones we've been seeing recently. So we will see how all of that ends up kind of evolving over the years. I'm sure there's going to be a ton of whiteboarding going on in Jeff's garage over any kind of off-season stretch to figure out what they want to do next. But yeah, it's certainly interesting times at the very least in which we are living these days here. One question that was posed to me earlier this week by great friend of the podcast, official accountant of the podcast, AJ Van Gilder, that I did not begin to have an answer for, frankly, and I was curious what you two guys thought. Jordan, I'll begin with you. Who do you think is getting voted out next? I truly have no idea how this is about to play out.
Ooh. Yeah, that is a great question. I'm going to say next. Ooh. Yeah, that I honestly don't know where to go. I'm just going to say and predict Jonathan loses immunity and he goes next.
That was the answer that I gave AJ, that if Jonathan is vulnerable, I could see this being the time that he goes out. Dom, do you have any names that come to mind immediately for you? And now I'm kind of reminding myself here as well. We still have 3 active idols, right? Lindsay's amulet just became an idol. Marianne has her idol, and Mike's, or I guess Omer has the idol, and we'll see if he ends up giving it back to Mike.
Yeah, this is why we almost have not even got to maybe the worst excesses of the advantages and the twist this season yet, because at this point, with the finale only 9 days away, Colin, it feels like it's almost pointless to try and unpack, okay, these are the alliances, these are the possible final 3 plans or the deals that might be in place. And it's just going to be a question of how these various twists just all collide at the same time and who somehow is left without immunity when all is said and done there.
Right. Yeah, that is a thought that I've had as well, is there may be a pretty solid plan to get rid of whoever it is, but then I believe it's the case that Lindsay's amulet idol expires at this final 6 round, and just seeing her get up and playing and getting up to play that may inspire Marianne and whoever has that other idol, whether it's Mike, Omer, or who knows, someone else, to feel like, well, God, on top of the immunity necklace that is out there somewhere, that is a lot of totally invulnerable people, and I would potentially be a fool not to play my idol just to guarantee that no matter what happens, I make it through here this next day. So I am also bracing myself for the idea of a potential, not full-blown advantage-geddon where there's only one person left to be eliminated, but kind of a mini version of that where there's a snowball effect of someone stands up to play an idol, and that means every other idol in the game gets played just on an abundance of caution, out of an abundance of caution.
It's going to be fun. I'm excited.
Yeah. Long story short, I do not begin to have any degree of confidence in not only who this next elimination might be, but how pretty much anything is going to play out from there. Jordan, do you have like a final three in mind that you would like to see show down at Final Tribal Council?
I would like to see Omer in the Final Tribal Council. I would like to see Jonathan just because I'm curious to see how the jury is going to react to him. And then if I had to pick one other person, I think I would go with Marianne just because I'm rooting for her and I think it would mean the world to her to get to the final three. So that would be the final three that I am hoping to see. I don't really see how that would be our three at the end, but with all of these twists colliding at once, I guess you never know. So I'm just going to cross my fingers and hope for the best.
Yeah, and how about you? Because I think I'm at the point where I like Jordan, I don't know how we would even arrive here with this particular threesome, but I think the most interesting final three to me would be Omer in there with a real chance, Mike in there with a real chance, and Lindsay in there with a real chance. Are you on roughly that sort of page, or what are you hoping to see out of Final Tribal Council this year?
I think this may be, you know, we talk about the final three as often not really allowing for these close contests, even though that was meant to be the idea when it was first instituted, right? And I feel like in recent times it's been somewhat more competitive at the very least, but I think this might be our best shot in quite a long time of another maybe Dom versus Wendell style situation, where if you have two people in there who would have played very different games and maybe far more different than Dom and Wendell, who, you know, personality wise were quite different, but in terms of how they played were often joined at the hip, you might have maybe like Yul versus Ozzy is weirdly a better comparison, like a natural showdown between two very different ways of playing the game or two very different personalities, but something that actually does feel like a true contest.
Yeah, I'm getting similar vibes where I have a hard time coming up with a final three that would be totally uninteresting to me. I think there probably are some combinations you could put together where in practice they would be significantly less interesting because the jury was fairly lopsided compared to how they may have been in other timelines, but I feel like we are likely to get a pretty competitive Final Tribal Council this time around, so that is something I'm looking forward to. I just have no idea who the people being competitive in it are more likely than not to be there. Another thing I wanted to actually ask you guys about, when we end up seeing Drea leave this week, and we saw kind of a similar thing from High the week before that, but not to nearly the same extent. I certainly love that people are leaving and congratulating those who outplayed them and like being good sports in general. I think that's a fun development to see. And I don't think it's a coincidence that sort of thing is happening on these seasons where there are a lot more super fans out there who really love and respect the game and are in it for more than just their own million-dollar wishes and don't care what happens beyond that. But when Drea was on her way out, I did think it was interesting that she basically, like, ran through everyone who was still left there and gave kind of parting thoughts right before she was about to get her torch snuffed. And a lot of it was not incidental by any stretch, but didn't necessarily pertain to their games. And she wasn't, like, with the exception of Mike potentially, going out of her way to, like, try to blow up anyone's spot. Although I did hear her say on the exit interview with Rob that telling Mike he was a lock to win was an attempt at kind of giving him the kiss of death that he mentioned may have been in play there. But what would you think, Jordan, if it became, like, not necessarily obligatory, but somewhat standard for people as they're about to get their torch snuffed to kind of give that rundown of, like, parting thoughts on everyone? Do you think that'd be good or bad?
Ooh. First of all, I think that's hilarious. I didn't even put two and two together. I thought she genuinely just loved Mike. I didn't realize that she was saying that to put a target on his back and give him the kiss of death. But I mean, Drea played so hard that I am not surprised that she kept on going all the way to the end. I don't think it's necessarily a good thing or a bad thing from my perspective. I think it would certainly add a layer of strategy to things. You've enlightened me that it was just a part of that was strategy. I wasn't full on Jeff Probst, like, ready to go on an entire monologue about how beautiful that moment was. But I did seeing that, it was refreshing. I did enjoy that. So if it becomes a thing where you're going through everyone's game and you're saying things all the time, like, yeah, I mean, that'd be interesting. It's different. We haven't seen it before. I'm open to seeing things we haven't seen before. But I don't know if it would necessarily be a good thing or a bad thing. I guess there is the downside of, yeah, like, somebody's game could get completely blown up because of that. But I feel like anybody, like, what is that the equivalent of somebody flying the banner over the BB house saying, don't try, you don't remember from back in the day in the Shapiro era where we'd get the, I think there was the one that I think of the most was, Eric is a liar or something like that in BB-8 for our friend Eric Stein, unfortunately. I feel like that would be the comparison where you see, I guess, although that's different, that's like the outside world interfering, whereas this, it's like everybody's within that confined survivor bubble. So that's not really an apt comparison. But just the way, what I'm trying to say is, I kind of think it's minuscule. Like, I think the people in the game are going to, like, Drea's in the game saying that. That's not somebody from the jury saying that. It's her, from her perspective, she just got voted out. If she's trying to blow up someone's spot or she's saying all these things about people's games, I don't think it's going to have that much of an impact, but who knows? Could be wrong. It's just my two cents.
Yeah, I think it's the Big Brother comparison I would use is, from time to time, we will certainly see people right after they get evicted and they're picking up their bag to go walk to the door, talking to people or, like, yelling at someone for blindsiding. Like, Howie yelling at Mike Boogie on his way out of All Stars is one, and throwing his hat is one that stands out to me as very memorable. And I like it intermittently, but I think I would be against this becoming, like, a standard thing that a lot of people feel compelled to do. Because at a certain point, it does, even though everyone would go in knowing that, hey, this is liable to happen, and it's very difficult to try to, like, mute people as they're on their way to get their torch snuffed, I think it's it can be at least awesome when it's truly organic like this. I think it would pretty quickly reveal itself to be a bad thing if it became super standard. Dom, what did you think when you saw Drea go through all that?
I was mostly surprised to see all of that coming from Drea as opposed to someone else. It was like, for someone who seemed so kind of guarded and always alert or on alert during the season, it was like this spring finally uncoiling, and you could see she felt so much more relaxed in that one moment. Although she has said in some of the exit press that I saw from her that she felt like it wasn't like the vibe suddenly changed and she was more able to be herself in that one moment. She was more kind of lighthearted and really enjoying the experience the way that you saw these flashes of at times throughout most of it. And it was only, you know, the Drea that you saw was much more kind of intense and in game mode than the one that she actually remembered of herself out there. So maybe it shouldn't have been as surprising as it was. I think it's a pretty standard tactic. And like, I think back to, was it Victoria with Gavin, where it felt kind of half-hearted. And then there was, you know, to this day, people still make a lot of the fact that she didn't end up following through on that. I don't know. I always think it's kind of fun to see. I don't have a firm stance of whether it should even be allowed or not, which I know some people do. I think it's a fun feature where, like, hey, if you've just been voted out, a lot of the time people are too shell-shocked to do anything more than just wave goodbye and go grab their torch. But I almost like it when someone takes that final chance that they have to exert any control over the game, even as they're just about to leave it.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, that's an excellent, excellent point, Dom, is you are, and as speaking on behalf, and sorry to cut you off, Colin, but just speaking as somebody who has been blindsided before, it is very shell-shocking when you get voted out like that and you don't expect it. So for her to be able to have the ability to act in the moment and be like that, just hats off to her. And I feel like because it's so hard to do that, it would be, I think it's unlikely this becomes a common thing that happens all the time, but I could be wrong. Sorry, Colin.
No. I was going to say essentially the exact same thing. I remember Steven saying a few years ago that he thought it didn't happen very regularly because people were so often so surprised that it was them that they didn't think as they were like just on their way to grab their torch and go to Jeff to bring any of that sort of stuff up. Although, you know, if they'd had their full wits about them or it had been less of a blindside, maybe that would be less likely to be the case. Meaning the more blindsided they are, the less likely, perhaps ironically, they are to blow up the games of those blindsiding them. So I'm not super nervous that this is going to become some sort of issue for Survivor in the future as things stand right now. But we'll see if seeing Drea's exit has any sort of impact on the people on future seasons. I would imagine the people on 43 didn't get to see this episode before they went and filmed, but 44 and beyond, I guess, is the sample size that we're going to be looking at to see if there's any sort of lasting kind of Drea effect on people as they end up leaving the game there. But yeah, as things stand right now, I thought this particular case was very interesting, and I'm not going to be freaking out too much to about like what this could potentially become under the worst case scenario kind of timelines there. Yeah. All right, guys, I feel like there's got to be stuff from more recent episodes that we weren't in here to cover in real time that we're skipping over, but nothing is immediately jumping to mind for me. Did either of you have anything else that you were like dying to get to that you feel like we've skipped over to this point?
From my perspective, the only thing I want to bring up is, am I crazy for thinking Drea is the most likely person from this cast to return?
I don't think you're crazy at all for thinking that Drea is extremely likely to return whenever returnee seasons become a thing again. I think she would be someone whose name the producers would probably have penned in there if she's willing to do it, and this is something that happens in the next 3, 4, 5 years, which I'm guessing it will. I'm gonna hold off on saying she is like the runaway number one from this cast, just until I see how things play out for the others. I think plenty of people still left in the game have a ton of returnee upside as well. But Drea, I'm sure, is going to be someone heavily in the mix, and speculated about anytime returnee seasons are speculated about, in recently upcoming years here. Dom, do you have a strong take on seeing Drea back?
I think it's somewhat likely, if only because I really don't believe this thing about this is a new era, we're not going to be as reliant on returning players. I think they will be, and I think once we get to like 45, 46, that conversation will take on this increased urgency. And when they do, if they're hoping to draw mainly from the 40s, I mean, I think Drea is probably a shoo-in at that point. I do wonder how they're going to reintroduce her to the audience at that point, because she's not someone who, like, if you bring back Jonathan, well, just his sheer size, I mean, more so than anything else, like, you can tell what his hook is, or like a lot of the people from 41, right? You know, Ricard, Xander, Shan, and in some cases the interactions between them are like, okay, you can tell why they wanted those people back. With Drea, I think you mostly get more of the same, and people will like that, but it's not clear what, like, the one thing is. And if there is something that really characterizes this new era, is that every single person out there has their one thing that is, like, the only aspect of their personality that you really see clearly at first.
I think for Drea, Dom, I think they would probably hype up the tribal council. I believe it was the previous episode where she played her idol, after Roxroy was voted out, and there was the discussion about race and representation on Survivor. I feel like that will, Jeff, I think, really enjoyed that moment, and I imagine that's something that will definitely come up with her. And just the fact that she had every advantage at some point, mm-hmm. did she not? Like, comparing her to somebody in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, she was the Thanos of Survivor. Like, she had every single advantage at some point. So I imagine that is something else they could talk about with her. But if we're talking about one specific thing, I imagine, yeah, that would be maybe her quote unquote thing is, in terms of bringing her back, is not going to be as large as somebody else. And I can't give you examples from 41 because I haven't seen it yet, but I understand the point you're making there, Dom.
Yeah, I think it's kind of tough if someone's big moment in one season involved advantages in some way, because unless they have a truly like Tony-esque propensity to just hoover up any advantages in sight, you have to think she's not going to have as deep a bag of tricks if she were to come back to play again, even if she finds like one idol or one advantage or what have you. And so, you know, if let's say Jonathan comes back again and he's doing just as well on the challenges as he was previously, okay, great. And if he's not doing as well on the challenges, well, that's a contrast that you can really make a big deal out of. Maybe it's some like my Superman sucks now thing. If like Jonathan is washed and can't perform as well as he used to. But if it's, oh, last season you found three idols and this season you haven't. What's up with that? Well, that's just how advantages work. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, I did wonder.
Go ahead, Colin.
I'm nervous to even put these words on the public record, but I was thinking to myself about Drea having four advantages concurrently could go down as like an all-time Survivor record, and my fear is that I'm going to call it an unbreakable Survivor record, and that is going to trigger like the cosmos into someone on some future season finding five or more because they just go so haywire with it.
Yeah, someone's going to have six idols. Yeah. Are you ready, Colin? Oh, man. I can't wait.
Yeah, well, I believe I am pretty much fresh out here. Jordan, such a pleasure as always having you on the show. Do you want the people to be finding you on social media or anything you want to plug here?
I feel like this is a discussion we have at the end of all my
I think
appearances
it
these
is,
days
yeah.
on the Dom and Colin podcast. Yeah, I mean, you can. I'm out there on social media. If you want to follow me, great. I don't really, that's your prerogative. That's awesome. I would much rather you support Dom and Colin and you follow them and their podcast and you become a patron for Dom and Colin. I think that is very important. So please go do that. And if you want to support me in any way, you enjoyed this podcast or you were a listener of the Happy Hour way back in the day, you want to help me out, you can go to settingscoliosisstraight.org. That is an organization that raises money for people with spinal deformities. I had scoliosis growing up and I had to get spinal fusion surgery when I was a kid, and that was a pretty wild experience. And there's a lot of kids around the world who need help and support. So if you want to go donate and make a difference, that would be greatly appreciated. And if you are not able to be a patron of Dom and Colin, you aren't able to donate to that charitable cause, you can do me a favor by subscribing to two podcasts that I really like. One is called The Choir Room. That is with my good friend Matt Liguori. The other is, and I don't want to mess up the name, this is my buddy Matt Gagan's podcast. This is it The Lonely Boys? It's The Lonely Boys. It's a Gossip Girl podcast, which Colin, I believe you were a guest on that podcast. Dom, I don't know if you were a guest on the podcast or not yet, but go check those out. Thank you for giving me the floor to plug all those things. And Dom and Colin, just seriously, thank you guys for having me. Such a pleasure to catch up and to talk. And this was really fun. And 10 years ago, going back to the scoliosis thing, I was 18 years old. This spring, I was recovering from a set of surgeries on my back. And it was a challenging time for my family and I. And one podcast that helped me get through that time was the Dom and Colin podcast. So, gentlemen, thank you for doing what you do. It's been over 10 years of podcasts together. You guys should be very proud of what you've accomplished. And you made a big difference in my life during that time at many points in my life. And I am just so honored that I get to be a guest on your show. And you give me a chance to talk about a show I like to watch. So thank you. And Dom, if you want to talk about The Ultimatum or any of those other trashy reality shows or 90 Day Fiance, you hit me up anytime and I'm there, my man.
Buddy.
Yeah, Jordan, I believe you know this, and I believe we stumbled upon this fact like when we were together in person one time at one of the live know-it-alls events, but all the way back in 2012, we had set up a, and it still exists somewhere, we'd set up a Facebook page just for the podcast once it seemed like it was becoming a regular thing. And you, Jordan Parhar, in the year 2012, were the first person ever to send us a message to that page. So I've been loving you for a long time. Continue to love you. Thank you so much for coming on here with us this week. Dom, anything else you wanted to get to?
No, I'm good.
All right. Well, that I believe is going to do it for us here. Dom is on Twitter at DomHRV. I'm on Twitter at Colin Stone. The aforementioned Patreon is patreon.com/DomandColin if you would like to join up with us there. Jordan, one more time, just thank you so much for taking the time, staying up late here with us this week. Let's please do this again sometime in the not too super distant future.
Let's do it. Can't wait, guys.
All right. That is going to finally wrap it for us here. Thank you all who have made it this far. We will be back very soon with to break down whatever ends up happening at this next tribal council or two as all these idols start flying. So looking forward to seeing how all this plays out. We will talk to you soon. Take care, everybody.